China MSG.
Hi guys, welcome to China MSG. In this episode, we have
Matthew from a bar called Hakkasan.
Is it a restaurant or a bar?
It's a restaurant bar. It's more a restaurant.
He's very nice. So this intro is not going well. But anyway, here we go. Then we're going to talk about bartending, culture, travel, Matt, making alcohol. Not really sure. But we're going to be doing some stuff.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, guys.
All right.
All right, guys. Welcome to China MSG. This is Jeffrey.
Wally here.
And with us today in our bro-tastic studio, we have... please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Matthew.
Matthew is... actually, I don't know. You're a bartender. You're the bar manager. You're the mixologist. You're the general manager. Who are you, Hakkasan?
I'm a bar manager. Yeah, I guess. You know.
What do you mean, you guess? It was like one of those contracts. It's like, you're kind of like the guy.
No. Well, no. I started working for the company in London. I came over and they gave me the position to manage the bar. So I guess I'm a bar manager. I'm not too sure exactly what a mixologist is, to be honest with you.
So today David cannot join us. We actually replaced David, I think, with a more... We wanted an English accent or whatever the fuck kind of accent you have. We wanted somebody with a presence, so we actually kicked David out today. No, David cannot join us today because last night he... for people who are not in Shanghai, Wednesdays in the club industry in Shanghai is considered like a really busy night. I don't know if you guys know this. Do you know this?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like Thursday is not as busy as Wednesday. Wednesday is like it's the traditional ladies' night, right?
Yeah, right.
Are you guys busy on Wednesday in Hakkasan?
Yeah, we are. You know, it's the midweek pickup, right?
Well, there we go.
Everyone kind of like,
I think in the US, if it's more like Thursdays, it's like...
Is it?
The weeknight. If you're going to go on a weeknight, it's the Thursdays.
Yeah, well, there we go. But Wednesday's here, and he apparently was really slammed at the club, and he says, there's no way I'm going to make it. So he probably just went home around, 5 in the morning.
So yeah, David was had a long night last night, so didn't make it today.
Before anything, actually, so you work at Hakkasan. For people who don't know, Hakkasan is... What is Hakkasan?
Hakkasan, it was a restaurant started in London. It was the first fine dining Chinese style cuisine restaurant. We opened up just off Tottenham Court Road and Oxford Street in a basement that used to be a car park. And we opened up in 2001, and then the company started expanding in 2010 and we went global. Yeah.
So I was always under... Do you know what Hakkasan... Wally, do you know what Hakkasan is?
You know, I used to work in the same building as Hakkasan, basically. But funny enough, I visited. I haven't eaten there yet. I've heard great things. I'm embarrassed to say how long I thought it was a Japanese restaurant.
I thought it was a Japanese restaurant. So
yeah,
again,
a lot of people get that, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody... So if you haven't heard of Hakkasan, you would automatically assume that that's a Japanese restaurant.
Yeah, we get a lot of that.
But it's not only... I mean, it's a Chinese restaurant, right?
Yeah, but it's mainly Cantonese-style cuisine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's an interesting story. So it's a Chinese-style cuisine opened in London. Is that correct? And then brought back to China.
But it's not always even a restaurant, right? I heard in Las Vegas it's a nightclub or...
The company wanted to get into more different kind of lifestyle brands. So yeah, we opened up a nightclub in Vegas in MGM Grand, which was the biggest club I think opened up so far in Vegas.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we started. We had a...
Were you there? Have you ever been there?
Oh, no.
Have you ever visited there?
Not yet, but it's on my to-do list.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No. There's one in San Francisco.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I mean, Hakkasan, it's the only nightclub in our company at the moment.
Oh, it's in Vegas.
Yeah, we're opening up in Jakarta in a few months' time. We've got a nightclub down there as well called Omnia.
Shit.
Nice.
And another Hakkasan. We're opening a couple of day life bars in Bali and a few other projects.
Okay.
Yeah, it's expanded a lot in the last few years. I think since 2010, we opened like 13 hackathons. Mm-hmm. We've opened in India, Middle East. There are loads in America now in the States.
And it's always Chinese food, though. It's a bar or it's a...
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, Hakkasan as a brand is Cantonese cuisine-led. Okay. And then it has, you know, a few bars and restaurants.
So what is the name from? Do you know?
Yeah, no? Tell us. And the logo. It looks like a... I don't know if you guys speak Russian. It looks like a Z in Russian. The letter Z. Seriously, it does.
No, I'm not too sure about the backstory to the logo, but the actual name of the company. I don't know, in London... Yeah, you can pretty much like lame anything that sounds a bit Asian and kind of.
And so get it's just like, oh, it's exotic.
Well, no, Hakka stems from the Hakka.
That makes sense. The Fujianese,
Yeah, San from Japanese, as in sir, right?
So it's right.
Like, yeah, it really, there's no correlation between anything, but it just sounded really cool. So I guess that's what they want to go with.
It does sound kind of cool, though.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And the logo is nice as well.
The logo is nice as well.
Yeah.
Did you work for them in London?
Yeah. No, I started working for them in 2011, and then,
doing what?
I came in as bartender. I was moving around a little bit, and
in London.
I moved to London in around 2010.
Okay.
As a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning the trade there a bit more seriously. And it was a nice company to work for. I worked for a few Chinese-style restaurants and bars before.
In England?
Yeah, in England. A little bit in Wales as well.
Okay.
In Cardiff.
Mm-hmm. And Wales, they're known for their whales. What?
No. Wales? No. Yeah, we get one or two like every other... other year. But
So you were a bartender first, then you joined Hakkasan.
Yeah. Well, originally I started out as a like illustrated designer.
No, designing drinks, like drawing drinks?
No, I was working for TV companies doing cartoon art for children's TV.
Wait, cool. Back the truck up. Back the truck up. So you're over there drawing, having a regular job, working regular hours.
Hmm.
Friday night going out, having your weekends free.
Yeah.
In a healthy environment, no alcohol, no tobacco. Mm. Christmas, of course, with your family, your friends.
Yeah.
Parties with your friends, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, nah, forget that. That's what?
Well, I don't know. I think there's two ways you fall into hospitality, right? You know?
Okay.
It's either... You know, someone, you do it as a part-time job, or you do it a little bit as a student, and, you know, you end up just carrying on that, and you don't look back, really. I kind of started doing it part-time. I wasn't really enjoying, like, weekend work. I was doing some freelancing, so okay. Just to get extra cash, you know, you do side jobs and bits and bobs. I know people go to hospitality school. A lot of people kind of walk into it. I think it's a vocation which you can learn on your own, you know.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of like apprenticeship style study and work involved. People enjoy it, you know. It's a very sociable field to get into. I guess when you're working on a desk all day,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like I had troubles with mornings. I don't know why. I think that just comes from, a hangover from student life. But
you don't say. Kurt rolled in here at 1 o'clock, rubbing his eyes. So you were an illustrator and you started working part time and... At what point were you like, okay, I'm not going to have this? You're working for a TV station, right?
I work for a small, it's quite a large animation studio in Cardiff.
Is that considered a good job?
Yeah, it was. I was doing a lot of pre-production work.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot of it involved doing concept art for children's TV shows.
Okay. But I have a friend who does that.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing with that is as well, it's very seasonal. Yeah. So you have your like post-production time, which is a certain stage of the year, and then you go into production and then post-production. So that was only like it was mainly freelance contracts that lasted like 3, 4, 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the rest of the time I was trying to do some freelancing jobs for some design companies, doing some illustration work. But yeah, a lot of the time, I suppose when you do work for yourself, you find yourself needing to find cash from somewhere, yeah? So you just find a role that you can walk into. And it was something that I did a little bit before when I was a student. And I found it really interesting.
So but when you say you did a little bit before, how much did you know, like as a bartender, knowing what you know now?
Not too much, you know. I mean... Yeah, a lot of bartenders, as long as you've got a good personality and you can talk to guests, your pretty much your foundation of knowledge isn't that important, I suppose, in specific places, yeah?
Well, yeah, like in a nightclub, right? Where 90% of your drinks are gin and tonics, right?
Yeah, you know? I started out, I quite enjoyed juggling, you know? That was kind of like...
Do you know flair?
Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
Shit. Okay, so flair is what? Is juggling bottles, pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much breaking stuff, pissing people off.
Why would you piss people off?
Well, you know, people are waiting for a drink, and you're just kind of like fucking around a little bit.
That's awesome. It's like, can I get a glass of wine? Wait, hold on. Start juggling for 10 minutes. Da-da-da-da-da. Flame.
Yeah, pretty much.
Can I have a glass of wine?
Yeah.
I'm not finished yet.
That's really... Yeah.
What you said is a good point, though. I think we talked about that before. It's like, for a lot of positions, I think it's... much more about the right person and personality than it is about like the coming with a certain skill set. You know, that's actually the most important thing, I think.
If you're kind of built for it, right?
Yeah. If you're passionate about it or interested, or you know, in this case, you know, like you said, guest relations or you know, service, being able to talk with people. You know.
So let's go through this journey real quick. So you're doing this part time. At what point are you like, hey, I'm going to make more money as a bartender, or is it just I like it more, or I'm just an alcoholic, or both?
I think we're all secretly alcoholics, you know. If you touch alcohol, you know.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line, but I find it really enjoyable. I like working on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I enjoyed my other job, but this was much more like interactive, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very much more stimulating. Yeah, and then I got the opportunity to travel as well. I think that was like one of the key things that kind of...
But that's super unusual though, right? Like how many bartenders, I mean, you know, bartenders back in Hawaii, in the States, nobody really travels. It's not like I've joined bartending and you're like cabin crew in a airline. No, I mean, most bartenders don't travel anywhere.
I don't know. Am I wrong? You guys know a lot more bartenders than I do, but ones I've met in talking to them, maybe it's the places I've lived, like Shanghai, Hawaii, you know, transient locations. I have met quite a few who do travel and work.
Maybe the ones that work for hotels, no? I mean, that's... Or maybe a big brand, but I mean, if you're working at your local club, you're not...
Well, I think the profession in general is quite transient. I think that's a lot of the problems I have with... staff is they jump around, you know, like bar to bar to bar,
right?
No one really seems to want to stay long term in any sort of role, unless I suppose if you study hospitality, if you're working for a hotel, I think that's something that people see more as a kind of a career builder,
right?
If you work in a cocktail bar, typically your income is quite low. I know in the States you know, a lot of bartenders work for tips, which is...
Yeah, it's quite normal.
It's quite a big incentive, but I don't know, in Europe, in England...
How is it in England?
No tips.
Well, yeah, you said London has no tips. I imagine it has some tips, no?
Yeah, I mean, you do get tips, but I know in London, you get like a lot of different people coming in, right? It's not just British. It's a big mix. I mean, like Americans tend to tip just because I think it's kind of like bred in that you need to tip your bartender, right? It's like sort of... when I go to the States... And I'm at a bar, even if it's like a dive bar, you know, I feel obliged. You know,
you have to. Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, I buy a beer, I got to put $1 down or whatever. Right.
About $1 per drink is normal.
Yeah, you know. But you kind of feel obliged to do that. And in Europe, it's pretty much like, you know, you expect service, you know, you pay money. And that's pretty much...
How much of would you say of your, let's say, weekly income in London are tips?
I think it depends where you work, really. Okay. You know, there's many. I mean, it's like New York. My friend works over there. She's like, okay, there's the majority of the bars. Okay, you work for tips, but you're on quite a low wage, and then you can work in some top end cocktail bars. Mm-hmm. But there's only a handful. It's a bit like Shanghai in a way. But people, the bartenders really kind of compete to work in these places. Mm-hmm. And when you get there, you get good salary because they get high volume.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You get a nice service charge and people tip more because, you know, they have more money. So you try and, as a bartender, work in venues that they're a bit more attractive to clientele, really.
So, okay. So before you went to Hakkasan, so you were working where? Or did you join like as a bartender? Like, how did you learn your tools of the trade? That's what I'm actually curious about.
Oh, yeah. No, I started working in Cardiff, Wales for a little bit. Okay. I watched the movie Cocktail with Tom Cruise.
Shit, isn't that like an 80s movie? I never
know. Yeah, it was the 80s movie.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
But yeah, so I watched that and yeah, it's great. You know, it's about this like bartender that went to university. Uh-huh. So he's like educated, but he's falling asleep all the time. Uh-huh. Then he ends up working in like TGI Fridays. Uh-huh. And then, you know, he's juggling bottles.
Uh-huh. So you're like, oh, okay, I want to juggle.
Yeah. I was like, that's pretty cool, you know. And then he goes and works in the Caribbean, right? I think he goes to Jamaica or something. He's working on a beach bar, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, that's it. The end of the movie. Yeah, not so much, you know, when they're... You know, in a yacht.
What happens in the end of the movie?
Well, there's a couple of people die, and it's, you know, it gets a bit messy towards the end.
Really? But, I don't remember this movie. I'm sure I've seen it.
Yeah. But no, it was just like, it was very attractive, yeah? So started doing this, started juggling.
And you're like, oh, I want to be Tom Cruise. I guess that's how it's going. First I become Tom Cruise, then I start juggling.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's cool. Started doing that. And then, my friend was offered me a job working full-time to go and work in Egypt. In Sharm el-Sheikh on the beach. And I was thinking like, oh, wow, yeah, this is the dream coming true, right?
So this is your Jamaica, right? This is your second part of the movie, wow. Right?
Yeah, for British, I guess like it's the Mediterranean, right? It's either Ibiza or somewhere with a beach, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I went to work in Egypt for 2 years.
How was that? Dude, okay. Egypt. So now you're okay. So this is before London or this is after London or?
No, this is before London, yeah.
So now you're going for 2 years to go to Egypt. What year was this?
This was like 2006.
Okay.
2007.
Nothing super interesting happened.
So can I just backtrack a little bit here? I mean, I know you guys are going to talk... You guys are going to talk shop. You guys are going to talk some inside baseball about bartending and stuff like that. But I'm just curious. Like, I think a lot of people here and a lot of our guests, ourselves included, you know, if you end up in Shanghai and you know, obviously you said you just lived in Egypt and London, sounds like you had interesting background. Maybe we lived in different places. So what was your whole journey, your basic kind of timeline to get here?
Oh, well, I worked, 2 years in Egypt, and then I went to London, did a little bit of work in Toronto.
Oh,
with a members club that was just opening up there.
Okay.
And then, after Toronto, I moved back to London, and then, just stuck around for a little bit, and London's good, you know, you get a nice salary, you have a good standard of living, it's nice, it's close to home. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think bartending for me, it was like, I wanted to travel, you know, get an opportunity, take it, you know, go see the world, work somewhere else.
Right.
And, so the company was growing up and they said like, who wants to go to China? And I was like, yeah, all right. Yeah. Let's give that a go.
Put your hand up.
Yeah. You know, nice. Straight in there.
Really? So, and is London your hometown?
I live in Canterbury, which is, you know, just 60
miles.
Oh,
for sure, the Canterbury Tales, right?
It is, yeah. You know, Geoffrey Chaucer. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I know this. Public school education is not that bad.
I'm impressed.
So here's what I'm always curious about, like for all the people who end up here. Like, would your friends or even family from back home, if you ran into someone you hadn't seen from back home from way back, and you told me you were living in Egypt and Toronto and London and Shanghai. Would they be surprised that is that or would you have seen that in your future back then?
I don't know. I think traveling was always something I wanted to do. You know, when you're a student, you go on like a gap year and you travel around the world a little bit. I never really wanted to stay in the hometown. Yeah, you always kind of like want to go out and explore.
You come here, you don't speak Chinese.
Mm.
Yeah, no. You didn't speak Chinese then.
Well, I knew Fa Piao. They told me that before I came.
Do you know? Okay, so to our one listener, aka mom, Fa Piao is how would you?
Wish my mom would listen.
It's a what is it? An official receipt?
Yeah, it's like a tax receipt.
Yeah, it's a tax receipt.
Yeah. And for those who might be curious, a Fa Piao in China is a. You know, very important to, how can I say, to certify official transactions, to avoid any scams, to avoid, you know, unofficial bribes and things like this. Yeah. And at the same time, on the flip side, there's a lot of scams and bribes and things like this attached to the Fa Piao thing. There's a, I mean, a common thing you might see is when you're stepping out of the subway stations in certain areas, you know, you might see people just selling Fa Piaos. Fa Piao, Fa Piao.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
you can buy them. You can buy them for tax services.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, because it's not like, you know, like I don't know how it is in England, but in the States, a receipt is whatever machine you're using. You know, there's, you want to save your receipts, but, you know, sometimes it's very like, if you go to a chain store, you'll have their name, the address, all the transaction pretty efficient. But sometimes they're very basic. You know, they're just very, very basic receipts. I don't know what the rules are in the States for receipts.
Yeah, and you can, still use handwritten receipts for tax purposes in the States.
But here, you have to purchase.
Yeah, if you want to get money back or anything like that, you know. But you have to get the official role.
Like, you can't just use, you have to have the machine that's given to you, that's certified by the government.
Yeah.
And the roles are also brought from the tax bureau. So the roles that you use, they all have the same system, and they have a lottery on top of them. So, you know,
the lottery thing. That's
Do you ever win any money?
Cool. Oh, that's right. Explain for our listeners, how does that work here in China? That's interesting.
I think it's one of the most interesting. Have you ever won any money?
I don't know, maybe. It's in Chinese. Yeah.
Actually, that's actually interesting. There's a little scratch part on every Fa Piao receipt where you could scratch and potentially win money. Yeah. And that incentivize people to ask for them so that you know, if you're in a restaurant, the restaurant then has to, when it gives you that, they have to officially declare that money, right? They can't just use it as cash.
And it's a big deal if a restaurant or a bar doesn't give a customer Fa Piao. If they were to complain to the police will come and investigate.
Yes,
that.
Yeah. It's pretty serious. Oh, have you seen it happen?
I've seen it happen.
Where? A place.
A place.
Okay, guys.
I may have not worked at.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's the actually the numbers. It's one of the few places is written in Chinese characters, like, and it's not like. For, you know, like if you learn to, it's like the financial
characters.
That's
the interesting thing about China. You know, okay, yeah. So there's official character set for number sets for banking and financial stuff especially, where you can write things in, you know, Roman, what is it called?
Arabic
numbers, right? Common.
Hopefully not in Roman numerals.
Right. That's a possibility. Then you can write. There's a simple way to write, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and up and numbers in Chinese, and then there's a very special, complex way that to write these numbers in Chinese, and they're to ensure that there's no clerical errors, to make sure there's no mistake when it's written. Yeah. So you
wouldn't know if you won money. That's the thing. You scratched them, and unless it says like geez.
Yeah,
you wouldn't know.
But I don't know. I've heard stories of people winning, or like $10,000 like that, just off of a Fa Piao ticket.
Really? I always forget that. I gotta ask for these more often.
So you're coming over here. You land. You don't speak Chinese. You know how to say Fa Piao, right? And like. Do you know what do you even do to open the restaurant? Do you know how to hire people? Do you guys have a team?
We had an opening team, so a lot of the recruitment was done beforehand. But a lot of the especially logistical work, especially with setting up suppliers, sourcing ingredients.
Is it the same way to source ingredient suppliers here as it is in?
No, I think it's very much hands-on. I don't know. Like, as far as hospitality in Shanghai goes, I think it's getting really refined now. You know, a lot of people are looking for artisanal products or, you know, high quality products. It's not too much about how cheap you can get it. It's about, you know, getting a balance between, you know, quality and value. A lot of people spend time and effort on this. There's a few ex-bartenders that have set up, you know, fruit companies, fruit distribution companies.
Yeah, I've heard
companies,
of this. Yeah. I've heard of this.
And, you know, their focus is pretty much on getting good quality ingredients, not just sourced from mainland. It's about getting from, you know, Japan, South China, finding different, you know, growers. I mean, I went to a fruit market with one of our suppliers. You know, I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which was...
You're probably just going to bed. You're probably just getting home.
Yeah, pretty. I mean, it was much more easier than getting up for this.
Well, there we go.
So we just got in a taxi and went. I think it was like an hour and a half out of Shanghai. I went to a fruit market, and you basically have two sections. I don't know if you guys have been to a fruit market here at all.
Small ones. We've been to wet markets, but not like the
like a wholesale fruit market.
No, probably not that massive.
So that was a really interesting experience. It was. So I went down with my fruit supplier and my my financial director woman. So she wanted to see what the difference was between products. She had a restaurant hotel background before.
Uh-huh.
But trying to explain the difference between one fruit and different quality, it was quite difficult, you know.
So like a lemon with you want seedless lemon, you want to see a lemon with less seeds even.
You know, it's just like sort of, okay, you have a seedless lemon, seedless lime, you know, and it has a lot more sweetness. It's much more fragrant.
Uh-huh.
It has a lot more oils. It tastes really, really nice, you know, and this is a base for most cocktails like mojito, daiquiri. So this is a really key important thing. The problem is these limes cost, you know, 2-3 times more than your local variety, which is seeded. And for some reason, they always smell like petrol to me. I don't know why. They're, it's kind of a gasoline kind of dry fruits.
Probably they store it near the car.
Probably in a cargo ship that hauled oil.
Let's dump it next to the machine parts. That's fine.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit. Yeah, I don't know if you go to a local like a dive bar and you ask for like a gin tonic or something like that, and they'll drop this in, and it'd be like, whoa, okay, yeah, thanks for that.
Use your fingers to pick it out of there.
Yeah. So we went down to this fruit market with the supplier. It was morning, and then you have two sides to the fruit market.
Okay.
You've got like imported fruit section,
mm-hmm.
Which is typically from Japan or South regions that have been shipped in Thailand, other countries, and it's beautiful. You know, it reminds me of like a fruit market, you know, back in England. You know, that everything's lined up nicely. Things like, you know, even strawberries, they're like, each one has a cushion behind it, the stuff you get from Japan in the export shop.
Super expensive, right?
Yeah, super expensive. I mean, wholesale, it's not too bad, but it's kind of like the price you expect to pay retail back in the States or Europe, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Wholesale is, when remember, back in Europe or whatever, the States, a lot of those are imported.
Mm.
And they're still imported, but you're you know, at the local store, that's what you're paying here. Wholesale, two hours away.
Yeah.
That's the price.
All this time that I've been, it's still something I'm trying to wrap my head around. And it's, you know, I think it's, I had this misconception when I came here. I think a lot of people probably have this. It's like, oh, living in China must be super cheap. Like, everything's cheap there, right? Because in the States,
Hakusan is pretty cheap, right?
It's affordable.
Yeah. It's affordable.
We always think that, you know, stuff from China is cheap. So stuff in China must be cheap. But when you get here, actually live here, it's very strange. Certain things can be very cheap, but
like what? Like, let's give a few examples. Rent. Rent is still pretty affordable, I think.
In Shanghai, it's odd because Shanghai is one of some of the most expensive property on the planet.
But I still think it's affordable.
But rent is somehow.
It's not like New York.
Yeah, no.
Probably not like London.
No.
Basically, the property owners here make their profit on. You know, I guess turning over the property and development, not on rent so much, or it's much, much slower profit on rent. Anyways, for anything that's a high quality or brand name or that's not part of the local market, I mean, you can buy still noodles and, you know, little snacks and cheap food on the streets for very cheap. But if you're going to buy just... even t-shirts or socks or underwear.
Yeah, I mean, or a sandwich.
It's much in a proper like a department store or something like that. It's as expensive or some is more expensive than you pay for in the States.
I mean, H&M is more expensive here.
Yeah, and so for things like that, like fruits and things like that, I think part of it is, you know, the demand for this variety of quality and types of variety of fruits and things like this. Probably was never here before, and so I'm guessing that probably these things will slowly be more and more available as you know, locally grown in China. But for now, you know, until you can, you know, get a crop of avocado trees or the things that you know they didn't have here in popular market before, you know, it's all imported and it's very expensive.
So the one side you said was imported, right? So
yeah. Well, then there's like another section for your local.
Okay.
Which is a lot cheaper. And we do get a few items from like locally produced.
Uh-huh.
Typically where the quality is kind of borderline between import. Uh-huh. It's not really worth paying the extra price.
Right.
Things like, I suppose like oranges in a way. We get two types of oranges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one's imported for the skin, mm-hmm. and then the other's like local for the juice. You right. get a higher yield. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we kind of left the imported market, and my finance woman, she was like, okay, we're going to go here next, yeah? So we go to, we turn around the corner, and the first thing I see is a child in a box in a muddy road.
In a what?
It's like, I don't know, like one
child
of the-
Child in a box?
Yeah, it was a child in a box, yeah.
On
it was,
a muddy road.
If you can imagine, like going around a corner, and everything's like nicely cobbled, and yeah. then you turn around, and there's like this smell of... Like, you know, moist, you know, mud, like yeah, a bit musky, yeah, yeah. like yeah. rotting fruit.
Yeah.
And then you turn around the corner, there's like a box there with a kid playing inside it. Obviously, the, you know, the mom's like selling fruit and she's got to put the kid in the box to keep it entertained.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, okay. That's kind of interesting.
There's a kid over there.
Yeah. But then all the stores, I mean, like some of the stuff was okay, but, you know, these kind of, yeah, I didn't want to stay there too long. It smelled a bit like very farmy. yeah, the fruit was kind of like not 100%. If you go to some of the local, you know, supermarkets, yeah. I think you find, especially in comparison to what we kind of expect if you go into a supermarket or uh-huh. like a mall back home, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you
we
expect
have supermarkets. Don't worry, we have them.
Yeah, all right.
It's like on okay. malls. I think you all Americans are in a mall.
I don't know if that's lost in translation.
We have supermarkets.
Yeah, but like all the fruit is perfect. You know, nice, yeah. nicely selected. Yeah. And I don't think people understand actually the when you bring like fruit or vegetables into Western country, there's a lot of rules that you know the importance have to right, kind of right, go right. by guidelines. You know, like from the shape of your banana. To the color of your apple, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of marketing thought. There's all kinds of things that go into that.
Yeah, and there's regulations as well. You know.
Hakkasan, can you tell us a little bit about your like starting with the physical location, maybe a little bit of the building? It's got a very interesting place. I think I'd encourage maybe our listeners to Google it. You know, take a look. It's in it's very famous, beautiful setting actually. So
yeah, it was in Bund 18, Bund number 18 on the Bund.
The Bund is what for people who don't know in Shanghai.
Yeah, how would you describe it to your friends back home? What is the Bund?
What is the Bund? It's a very I think very continental like Western influenced area of Shanghai, which was kind of built up by a lot of you know European and you know American immigrants. The beginning
not
of
immigrants. Wouldn't you say immigrants? More like colonialists.
Colonialists.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a little bit different. They were
I'm not sure how to describe them.
They were not
them,
coming to Shanghai to be like, you know, they were not what's it called? Past the Statue of Liberty on one of those big ships. Like, we're going to make it. No, yeah. they were coming over here like with a bag of opium.
Yeah, it was basically like,
all right, yeah.
Opium war, and then we're going to strong arm some motherfuckers and buying this shit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think there was a bit of resentment after
everyone
bit. Left.
You
yeah,
you think so? A little bit. People were a little upset that made half the country to drug addicts. thank you, England. Thank you, England.
Yeah, it's, you know, wow.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I think it was all of us, right? Combined effort.
Yeah, yep.
Well, a little bit. Yeah, it was. Americans were there as well.
You know, I think a lot of people came here in the 20s and 30s and before that, you know, just to kind of...
What about Hakkasan itself? I mean, it's a high-end restaurant, right?
Yeah.
What is the average check?
It's like probably like $80, I guess, in conversion. Lunchtime is we have pretty good
$80,
deal.
Yeah. Well, how much is an average price of a cocktail there?
It's like 80 RMB, so okay. I guess they were like $13.
Yeah, $13.
Something like that, yeah. Which isn't too bad. We're very competitive, I think, for
the Bund. Yeah, for the Bund, yes. Unique-wise, okay.
But we don't overcharge. You know, I think we're very fairly priced.
Do you have a service fee?
The rental costs on those properties are sky high, yeah. So it's not like people move in there and they're like, okay, we're going to make a lot of money on rich people.
You guys are definitely cheaper than Robuchon.
Yeah, you know, like I think they're charging, what, $12 for a coffee?
It's something insane.
I, in my experience in... From what I hear, I mean, Hakkasan's always rated as you know, very value, as far as value, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, rates very well.
What I think really interesting about the whole Hakkasan is your Hakkasan is coming from London, entering China to sell Chinese food to Chinese people and doing it well.
Yeah, nice. the first year was really bad for us, actually.
Was it?
I think, like you said before, you know, the name sounds Japanese.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of referrals from,
did you really?
You know, concierge hotels going like, oh, okay, you know, go there. It's a great Japanese restaurant.
Oh, wow.
It's like, what?
Interesting.
Can I get some sushi? No. Okay, can I get some edamame? No, we haven't got that yet.
Are you serious?
I worked in the same building, Bund 18, and I thought that for...
Yeah, but all of us thought it was like, oh, this new Japanese restaurant. And it was like, they're Chinese. I'm like, nah, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's better now. I think people, like, know what the cuisine is. Yeah. And I think for a lot of Westerners, it's quite appealing because it's very approachable. You know, services in English. You know, we try and do it. We do, like, dim sum. You know, we do a lot of small dishes and so, you know, people come. It's getting better now. It's nice. We've kind of like grown up over the last 3 years.
So now business is good?
It's getting better. I think it's not to the point where we kind of expected it or want it at the moment. But like every year it's kind of like growing up and growing up. We're changing the menu to suit the local requirements. Like, you know,
Which is what
people expect. Well, like fish, for instance.
Okay.
Okay, people's kind of palate. People want more kind of like fish, intense flavors here. You know, whereas I think back in the West, people expect something a bit lighter. You know, maybe with a little bit more like butter or sauce.
Right.
Whereas here, it's very intense. You know, people want things that are a bit more. I think to Westerners, it tastes a little bit more pungent.
Right.
But actually, you know, so we have to find a balance between, you know, bits and.
For your clientele, what's do you? How can I say? What's your like balance of like local clientele versus? Foreigners who eat there and do you see any
other Chinese outside of Shanghai?
Yeah. And do you see any change or evolution in that?
We started off with more local. So I mean, like kind of like developed a bit. Yeah. And then now it's about 50-50 demographic. I mean, we have like, we do martinis midweek, like we call it the Hakatini night.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of like a promotional thing we do. We have like really good value drinks. Like it's like 48 RMB for a cocktail.
Oh,
you
nice.
Get like a beer for 28, you know.
Oh shit, that's cheap.
So
it's like a happy hour? Or is it all night?
Yeah, from 7 till close. But it's more just to kind of get a pickup in midweek, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bar Rouge is upstairs. Bar Rouge is a sort of a roof terraced club that's been here for a long time. Yeah,
one of the oldest clubs.
Been over 10 years, you know. And so a lot of people see that as a destination place. So to find yourself in the middle, there used to be another nightclub below us.
Oh, a great nightclub.
Yeah.
A legendary nightclub.
God, I used to love going there. It was great fun.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Which we actually covered that in a different episode about why it closed down and what happened. Stampede, New Year's Eve, and yada, yada.
Yeah.
But go on.
Yeah, so I mean, like, we were competing against that. So we're not a club. We're not like a full lounge bar. We're a restaurant with two bars inside, so... But we get a nice crowd going now. It's nice. We have a DJ. We have like traditional
Pipa
music. Yeah, we got Pipa, live music. We do like free canapes pass around to get people in. And
he's going to start doing Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, we're going to do that soon. You know,
ladies' night.
Yeah, like
crazy Thursday.
Yeah, some of the nights you have in the club, say, yeah, they're kind of.
Models' night. You're going to start doing models' night.
Yeah, what's that? What, manicure night? Someone does that.
Oh,
manicure night. You know,
this.
Go in, get a free manicure. I don't know.
Well, I'm imagining like
it's like some people are coming up with
some aunties like sitting under the table while you sit your drink.
Some aunties are under a table
soaking your feet in a bucket.
That's so terrible.
And what's the auntie doing?
I don't know.
The auntie's kind of
she's doing a manicure. Oh right,
okay. I feel like a complete colonialist. Like, come on.
I think what part of the draw for that whole area is just like, and I think your guys' location is a perfect example. Just the view of the river, the Bund looking over the center of the city. It's a beautiful sight. I mean, that's part of why it's a tourist destination, not only for foreign tourists, but actually even more so for Chinese tourists.
Yeah,
it's a very famous location. And there's a famous Chinese song about the Bund 18, about that building. So I don't know if you ever noticed, you get Chinese tourists going in and snapping pictures.
What's that song?
I think it's called... Bund 18 or Waitan Shibahao, something.
Are you serious?
Something like that. Yeah.
Can someone you sing told me a little
that. I've never heard of the song.
You get people in there like snapping photographs at the front doors and stuff. Yeah. Just because of this song.
So for our listeners, really quick, in a different episode, we talk about Robuchon. So Bund 18 is a pretty well-known building in Shanghai.
It is.
You have a lot of restaurants. Mr. and Mrs. Bund is also in that restaurant, right?
Yeah, we have that there.
Yeah, Bar Rouge, of course. Mr. and Mrs. Bund, one of the most famous restaurants in the world, actually. Mm. Pretty well-known. Also a tourist destination. Bar Rouge are now also a tourist destination and a nightclub. Hakkasan. Now you have Joël Robuchon.
We do.
Yes. Have you been there?
No, I haven't yet. No.
Will you?
Probably. I don't know.
Why? I don't know. It's your neighbor.
Yeah, I know, you know.
Are we going to talk shit about your neighbor? Let's talk some shit about your neighbor.
Yeah, let's get some dirty.
It's super expensive. Shit. It's super expensive.
No, I mean, I haven't been there, so I can't comment on it. You know, I know a couple of people that work there. They have small sittings. You know, there's been some nice reviews about the food. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you like caviar and butter, apparently
yes,
that's a good thing.
Butter and caviar and more caviar and a gold leaf.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, but I can't comment on that.
A little bit more specific about your profession. Like, was there a drink list that you had to have? I mean, are you a Hakkasan bartender? Meaning, do you make Hakkasan drinks that they make in London, they make in Las Vegas? And
yeah, I think like, I mean, we do have a few staple cocktails. They're trying to push his signature drinks. But with the menu, it's kind of open-ended. So the back end of the menu is pretty much drinks designed by us, by the bar staff. We do a lot of in-house cocktail competitions.
You had a few cool ones, right? With the waiter and the...
Yeah, they've been fun, you know. We try and like trying to build up a relationship between waiter and bartender. Uh-huh. You know, it's just getting people, encouraging people that don't work like directly with drinks to kind of understand what they're selling. I think mm-hmm. if you go to a lot of restaurants, a lot of people get like frustrated, especially, you know, like foreigners, because they go in and they were like, oh, can I get a, you know, a dirty martini? What gins do you have? And then you get like a blank look back. So it's more to do with educating the whole team rather than the staff. But, you know, it's not natural for these guys. You know, a lot of people, their drinking habits, okay, baijiu, huanzhou, which are like rice and grain distilled and fermented products.
Mm-hmm. And beer.
You know, but everything else is completely alien, right. And I think a lot of people kind of don't understand that. You know, we're kind of like brought up in a culture where you're used to kind of like, you know, you go out, oh, let's have some tequilas,
right?
You know, let's do some slammers, let's have a beer, let's have a pickleback, let's do a boilermaker, you know, and a margarita.
I know what half of those things are. What's a pickleback?
Oh, it's like a shot of whiskey and a shot of brine juice, yeah. So you can do half and half.
Not bad. I'm kind of curious.
Of course you're curious. I'm just... Yeah. Okay, fine. Go on, please. Right. Okay, I get it. That's true. I think it's true. I think it's... you're right. I think there's... But over the last 2 years, have you noticed that there's... I don't know. This is my opinion. I think bartending has went through a large shift. I think it's the coolest thing to do in an F&B setting, in a restaurant. Everybody and their mother wants to be a bartender.
Yeah, they do, but a lot of the time the mother doesn't actually approve, you know. It's still kind of a bad kind of, it's almost like prostitution in a way.
Is it really?
No, from the way that like the previous generation see it, you know. It's not seen as a respected profession or something that
But isn't F&B in general not a respected profession?
Yeah, I think like, I don't know, it depends where you are. It depends on your background. You know, there's a lot of people like second generation hospitality. It depends on the country. Yeah, it depends on people's attitudes towards it.
I think in Shanghai right now, the way I see it, I don't know if you agree, is like not a revolution, but there's in terms of bar, like all the speakeasies that are opening. And I mean, the last 2 years, you have like a million speakeasies, little bars. The hipster bartender is cool now, right? Everyone has a mustache. If you're a bar, I don't know how Matthew does not have a mustache, which I find very strange.
I'm really shit with a mustache.
So I find very hard for me to believe that you're a bartender. But you have those little, like I said, those sleeve holders. So.
Yeah, my Gata bands.
But have you noticed? Yeah. I mean, it is this becoming this uniform. You have to have mustache, the glasses, the super hipster kind of get up.
Yeah, I don't know. I like, you know, on YouTube, they have the 10 things... someone says, you know, and they take different professions, and it was like 10 things bartenders say, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's just funny, you know, people come out with like, you know, I'm a mixologist, I'm doing this.
Oh, that's right, it's a mixologist.
It's almost like, it's really bohemian, like really, like everyone's kind of like, really laid back.
Like a psychologist, but I'm not, but I'm actually more like a mixologist.
That's like, the, I think there's a Portlandia episode about that.
I'm sure there is.
I thought he was a mixologist, but then he turned out he was just a bartender.
so you don't consider yourself a mixologist?
I don't know. Like, it depends what you want to label yourself as. I think people will call themselves mixologists because they don't want to be, they don't want to use bartender because I don't know, it sounds like a unprofessional job title.
Yeah, mixologist sounds funny. It has ist in it.
Yeah. I mean, but then, like, you know, people are like, I'm a drinksmith. I'm a bar chef.
Are you serious? I'm a this, I'm a that.
But I know job title, is it that important? I don't know.
It's, bar chef?
Interesting.
A drinksmith. Okay, cool. I mean, I don't know.
Hey, I think it's one of those. It's one of the things that's arguably kind of an important thing. I mean, if you talk about, you know, I don't know, developing your resume or your craft. You know, they say, you know, titles do affect people's even respect for their own jobs.
That is true.
I mean, it sounds silly, but I think there's some arguably good reason for that. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it started somewhere, right? It wasn't just like, you know, it's to differentiate yourself from everyone else.
I mean,
right?
I can say that in retail, you know, people have gone from sales clerk or a sales person, and now to like fashion advisor or
add executive to it. Executive fashion advisor. Executive bartender. You can add executive to anything.
Mm. Service assistant.
Executive service assistant.
So, yeah, there's a, you know, I mean, there's, but it's also, it has an effect in changing the psychology of the staff.
It does.
Oh, yeah. You know, job titles are kind of crazy. You know, once you become a bartender, like, what's the next step? You become a bar supervisor, or if you work in a hotel, you're a captain. I mean, I don't even know what a captain is.
Yeah, we talked about this. It sounds awesome, though. It does sound awesome. Like, you're a captain. He's giving directions and order.
You get a hat?
But, and this is real quick before we finish up. Like, this is another thing that I think in China is you know, the end state, right? The end in the state, I'm sure in London is the same thing. If you're a bartender, you're the bartender in a busy restaurant or a busy bar, you're making great money. And that's kind of an end state. I mean, you want a better job, but your job is to be a bartender maybe at a better place, right?
Yeah.
In the States, you know, if you're the bartender at one restaurant, you're making a lot of money on tips. And I mean, that's the end state. There's no... But here... It's like, well, you're a bartender, but you want to move up. But where are you going to move up? I mean, yeah, you could be a bar manager, but really, I mean, the goal is not to be the bartender. It's the goal to start your career as a bartender to develop in these roles. I think part of it is, I don't know, maybe it's different, but part of it, I think, in the States, there's no tips. So the few ways that you're going to raise your salary, is by moving up in a position, is by becoming a supervisor. Otherwise, your salary is not going to go up. While in a place like the States, if you're the bartender at a pretty busy restaurant, you're making great money. I mean, it's not going to go up, but there's really no place to go up. You're probably already making more money than the restaurant manager or, you know, in tips alone and working half the time.
I don't know. Like, I have some friends in New York, they say there's only like 5 or 6 bars in New York. You can go and work and get a decent salary. I mean, like, living costs are quite high in the States.
But in
New York,
bartenders make a lot of money in general.
Some of them do, some of them don't. You know, if you know, you say like, okay, you know, you're making a lot of money from tips and this and that, but a lot of these people are working like late nights, and even still, you're not guaranteed like a great income.
Yeah.
Like my friend was like, okay, there's 5 or 6 bars in New York City that pay like a decent professional salary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a professional salary. You know, I mean, what's your idea on a professional salary? It's a salary that you expect to get paid if you're like a professional, right? It's a job that requires training, skill, dedication. A lot of it's kind of you know, on-job training.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of courses that they say they teach people, but, you know, it's more to do with learning about how to deal with people, how to work relationships, how to deal with awkward customers. You know, it's not about mixing a drink. It's about mixing a drink and actually giving it to someone and explaining it to them. You know, that's the one crossover I found between, I suppose, design and art was you have an idea. How do you convey that, one, as an image? And then two, how do you explain it? The idea behind it, the concept behind it, you know, the story behind
it. How do you build a brand around it? How do you experience?
You don't want to go to a bar and order a drink and they just give it to you. You know, it's kind of a bit flat. It's a bit boring. But if you have a bartender that, you know, can build a big, nice picture and kind of like tell you a little bit about the ingredients, where it's from, you know, you value that
Educate you a little bit more.
Yeah? Yeah. It's like, okay, I don't mind paying, you know, twice the price because I know the quality of the ingredients. I understand. Right. Like, because if you, a mixologist can know, like, I don't know, 20 different gins and understand the concept of value over price. But if I'm a consumer, I'm looking at it going like, why am I paying more for this?
Yeah for a top shelf it's alcohol.
You know, they're the same thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about in retail, it's the same thing, right? It's, you know, what's the difference between, you know, a $30 bag and a $30,000 bag?
It's a story. Yeah.
It's a story.
Maybe.
Which has value. Which has value. Which in itself has a little bit of value. Are you a licensed bartender in, like, do you have like a license in England?
No, we don't. They I think they started trying to implement a scheme, but it hasn't really. It's not like the States.
In the States you do, in the States you do. All right, let's wrap it up over here because I know we all have to get to work. We all got to run. You have to go to work as well. You know, it's Matthew Hall, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't want your last name, or is it okay to say your last name?
That last name is it's fine.
So if you guys, well, I mean, we have listeners in Shanghai. If you're in Shanghai, go to Hakkasan, find Matthew Hall. He's usually not drinking at work, which I find very strange for a bartender. Wow. Which is, and usually, I mean, all the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But find him. He has... okay drinks. I mean, they're palatable.
They're all right.
They're very good drinks. Honestly, your drinks are some of the best I've had in Shanghai, period. And I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up your ass, but really, you do. Find him over there at Hakkasan. And if you're really nice, he might give you a shot, or maybe not. Maybe he'll sell you a shot.
China.
Boo, 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 MSG. Come on, bartender, just a little more tender. I ate all your peanuts, return me to sender. I've been to Gander, now I'm barely standing. Just call me a taxi and prepare me for landing.
Music on this week's episode of China MSG is by Semisonic with Closing Time, Coco Taylor with Hey Bartender, Boogie Belgique with The Bartender, Kendrick Lamar with Swimming Pools, The Beatles with Obladi Oblada, Yuan Chengjie with Bund 18, and Regina Spektor with Bartender.